This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Khoo Soo Chong and I'm with Philip C on this fine, fine morning.
It's a beautiful morning.
It is a beautiful morning. 7:36 a.m. in about half an hour, we've got the breakfast grill. What's going on there?
Yep. So Lin Ma is going to speak to Yeo An Tai. He's the executive director of AdvanceCon. Now, so who is AdvanceCon? Bursa Malaysia listed AdvanceCon has been awarded a total of 5 subcontracts worth around 186 million ringgit for the ECRL project since the middle of last year. Beyond that, it recently secured a quota of 26 megawatts under the fourth cycle of the large-scale solar LSS4 project. What else does this earthworks and civil engineering service provider have in the works? So Lin will be speaking to Yeo An Tai later to find out.
Okay, that happens at 8:05 in the morning. In the meantime, BFM is running a poll on Twitter, asking listeners whether economic frontliners should be prioritised along vulnerable groups in vaccine rollout. If yes, tell us which jobs should be categorised. There's 3 options, yes, no, and not sure. Right now, the yes camp is leading the way. And some of the responses include, designations like cleaners, public transport bus drivers, teachers, food delivery, security guards, construction workers, and Carl Chin piping in with saying, all the mums, which is interesting.
Very true, in view of Mother's Day.
Okay, so the global vaccination program over the last half year has revealed glaring inequities in terms of supply and distribution. Out of about 1.3 billion doses of COVID vaccines administered so far, half of them have come from rich people, rich countries.
Yeah, so just a bit of data, 45% have been, as you said, from the high-income countries, accounting for only 16% of the global population. Just 0.3% have been given in the 29 lowest-income countries, which are home to 9% of the population. Now, that is glaring inequity for you. One of the solutions being proposed to close the gap and provide more vaccine supply is by waiving intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines and treatments. Now, this proposal recently got a powerful boost when President Joe Biden declared US support for the plan last week. However, the IP waiver needs to be agreed upon by all members of the World Trade Organization, and this is likely to be an uphill battle.
So to discuss and offer an overview of the stakeholder positions, we speak to Dr. Lindsay Newman, Director of Economics and Country Risk at IHS Markets. Good morning, Dr. Newman. Now, the proposal for COVID patent waivers was put forth by India, South Africa and allied countries at the WTO back in October. Is there a precedent for such a measure?
In October 2020, about 6 months ago, India and South Africa submitted a request for a waiver to what is the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, the TRIPS agreement. It's being referred to as the TRIPS waiver. And their argument was essentially that given the global emergency that is the pandemic, WTO members should work together to ensure that IP rights like patents and copyright protections would not create barriers to timely access to medical treatment, including vaccines. Now, this question that you ask about precedence is quite interesting, actually, because if you look at the actual TRIPS agreement itself, the agreement itself contemplates the potential need for flexibility or even need for exceptions to traditional IP protections. I'm thinking here in particular of Article 31, which allows for the use of certain patents without the authorization of a rights holder under certain circumstances like national emergencies. So this seems pretty spot on to the situation we're in now, but proponents of the TRIPS waiver argue that really if they just were to rely on Article 31, it would take a very long time, it would be inefficient, it would be extremely expensive because although it provides for compulsory licensing, license holders still have to be remunerated. So that's why the proponents of the TRIPS waiver say that's why we need a sort of broader outright waiver on these IP protections.
Now, the US government was previously not in favor of loosening IP protections. So why have they reversed their stance under the Biden government?
Well, they released a statement last week on the 5th of May, the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai announced that the Biden administration was going to actually go forward and support the waiving of intellectual property protections for COVID-19 vaccines. And as you said, this was certainly a reversal of the former Trump administration's policy to protect IP of pharma companies. And it really is also being seen as reversing prior indications of how the Biden administration was likely going to come out on the waiver. In fact, earlier just last week, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the administration's chief medical officer, chief advisor to President Biden, gave an interview in which he said that he wouldn't be in support of an IP waiver if it took too long to negotiate. Now, it became quickly obvious that the U.S. had caught many off guard, not the least of which was its allies in Europe, but also pharma companies. And so this really opens the question for us that you're getting to, which is why then did the U.S. take this position? I think there are a couple of dimensions of this. The first is that support for the TRIPS waiver at home in the U.S. had been growing in recent weeks. Particularly, we were seeing mostly Democratic, although some Republican congresspeople lobbying the Biden administration in favor of the waiver. We're also seeing internationally that we're now at something like 60 WTO members supporting the waiver. But I would add something that, you know, I think people are perhaps overlooking, which is I don't think we can underestimate the impact of the latest COVID case surge in India in particular, which the Biden administration views as a key ally, particularly in the strategic competition with China. We saw just several weeks ago when, as we at IHS Markit had previously forecast, the U.S. began this transition away from a more U.S. focus, a more vaccine nationalist approach, towards engaging in vaccine diplomacy. We saw, for example, the commitment to send 60 million doses abroad. And while we always thought this would happen, the timescale of that transition was quite rapid because of the news and the scenes and the case surges in India. That really drove that. So I think, again, we're seeing this growing realization that just as there was collaborative effort to develop and push forward this R&D to develop these innovative and effective vaccines, in order to sort of contain COVID-19, we're going to, again, need to turn to a global collaborative effort. And so I think that these are the sort of factors that went into the U.S.'s recent reversal.
So, Dr. Newman, how likely is this proposal to be adopted, given the opposition from the European Union and other G7 countries?
The Biden administration's support for the IP waiver certainly boosts the prospects of implementation, but it will still take consensus among the WTO's 164 members for an agreement to be reached. And any resolution around the TRIPS waiver is unlikely to be immediately forthcoming. It's likely to take months and certainly not before the next TRIPS Council meeting in early June. I imagine it'll be a topic of discussion at the upcoming G7 Leader Summit also early in June here in the UK. And any negotiated waiver is likely to provide only a narrow temporary relaxation of IP protections, sort of temporary licensing for the near-term duration of the current pandemic. And I see that there will be mechanisms in place for IP rights to be reestablished tied to certain performance indicators like how much vaccine is being produced or herd immunity levels around the world. So it's important to be clear that this pathway of IP waivers alone is unlikely to represent an immediate breakthrough to provide more jabs in arms for those countries that need it.
Dr. Newman, what about the pharma industry? Could they come around to the proposal?
The buy-in from the pharmaceutical industry itself is likely to be slow going. Several pharmaceutical companies and industry groups have already been quite critical of the U.S. administration's support for the IP waiver. They're concerned in principle around disincentivizing innovation in their industry. But also they argue that the waiver alone there's limited evidence that a waiver alone would benefit access to COVID-19 vaccines in countries where there is low manufacturing capability, low technical know-how for vaccine manufacturing, sort of similarly to what I was just alluding to. And the argument there is that patents alone, IP waivers around, say, patents alone, without the trade secrets or technical know-how, without that expertise, is really not going to be enough to lead to a quick ramp-up for countries without that manufacturing capability. You may have heard about this analogy that's being sort of bandied about around having the recipe alone, the sort of patent alone, without the proper cookware, without the proper chef, means that, you know, you won't be able to scale up the vaccine manufacturing.
So what are the alternatives being proposed by those who don't agree with the IP waiver to resolve this global shortage of vaccines?
So pharma companies have made this argument, as recently, the EU, in response to the US's announcement around the IP waiver, the EU said that it's not going to be IP protections alone that are really the barrier that are preventing vaccine access, but it's bigger issues like ensuring that the existing vaccines are distributed in an equitable fashion. So countries that are perhaps have excess supply are ensuring that they are distributing those externally to areas in countries that don't have enough on hand, or that export bans, for example, that certain countries have in place that are preventing the export of ingredients to vaccine manufacturers elsewhere in the world should be reconsidered and lifted. And of course, there is the COVAX, which is a pooled procurement scheme that is intended to head off vaccine inequities and to support the global vaccine distribution effort. So there's the argument that countries where they can should be putting more effort and more money as well as additional existing doses of vaccines towards COVAX for them to distribute it in an equitable fashion.
That was Dr. Lindsay Newman, Director of Economics and Country Risk for IHS Market. And of course, the whole issue and what's at stake here is the fact that life must come before profit, especially if you're one of those big pharmaceutical companies that have taken money from the government to basically develop these vaccines to help save people. I think Johnson & Johnson was one of them, Moderna was another one. Pfizer notably didn't take money, but as it stands right now, only six companies around the world have gotten WHO accreditation for vaccines, right?
Yep.
Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, of course, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Sinovac from China, and then one...
Sinopharm,
yep, from China, and then one more, right? So the issue is, should you allow these pharmaceutical companies to hide behind intellectual property, patent protection, to then prevent other companies from replicating your vaccines to save more people? Clearly, to me, the answer is no, because life must take precedence over profit.
I have another angle, which is this really going to work? Because you have to address two things. The first is the dimension of time. People need the vaccines now. So even if you get the IPs done, they won't solve the current problem. So if they have to fix the problem, they need to get export controls done, they need to accelerate production, and they have to remove these bans. So because we need to fix the problem now, that's one issue. The second issue is, you can have the IP, but if you don't have the capability to do the manufacturing, as she was saying, you've got the recipe, but don't have the cook, or the cook isn't skilled enough to do it, then we got a problem as well, because you can basically share the recipe, but if people don't know how to manufacture it and scale properly, that's a challenge. So then it comes to question in my mind, why are we doing this? Is this a political game to help those countries like India who are capable to do the manufacturing, to use the IP to help solve the problem? But the issue still is, the current crisis we have is a current problem.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Newman might have an unfortunate assumption that because there's lots of scientists and chemists in China and India who have the perfect wherewithal to produce vaccines, should they have the template to do so?
Yes.
And production-wise, I mean, who better than China to scale up production and to produce it on a mass level than the Chinese? And they have demonstrably proven to be incredibly adept at that, right? In terms of what you talked about, how whether or not it should be on that discussion, definitely, right?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, you know, China, they have got their vaccines, Russia, they have, but who doesn't have? Japan, India, these are all allies of the United States.
Yeah, it shouldn't be just basically vaccine diplomacy where buddies of China and India, China and America get the vaccines.
That's the interesting dimension here.
Yeah. Okay, obviously fodder for discussions for the long term, not just for today, but we'll keep that narrative alive. Up next, we'll dive into Pakadan's new committee with analysis from Dr. Wong Chien Huat, the political scientist at Sanway University. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.